Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're going to be plunging into, well, a reality that might be far stranger than what our everyday senses pick up. Our mission today, to crack open this stack of fascinating articles, research, notes, all about these enduring mysteries that just don't fit neatly into conventional explanations. So get ready. It's going to be a journey where those usual boundaries between, say, physics, history, even our own consciousness, they start to get a bit blurry. The goal here is really to pull out the most important nuggets, the surprising facts, to give you a shortcut, essentially, to being truly well-informed on some pretty profound enigmas.
Absolutely. And we're framing this deep dive as an exploration into what we might call a veiled reality. You'll start to see how these unseen forces, these ancient secrets, and even the nature of our own awareness, they aren't just isolated little puzzles. Instead, think of them as threads, threads that hint at a deeply interconnected universe. It's really about seeing the larger tapestry, you know, behind all the individual stitches.
Okay, let's start then. Let's begin maybe in the vastness of the cosmos. That seems like a good place, because that's where some of the most fundamental puzzles really challenge our understanding of matter, energy, maybe even time itself.
It is. And what's truly fascinating here is just how much of the universe remains completely invisible to us. I mean, fundamentally unseen. Take dark energy, for instance, makes up over 70% of the universe's total contents. 70%.
70. Wow.
Yeah. And it's this invisible agent that seems to counteract gravity, actually causing cosmic expansion to speed up, to accelerate. Some scientists propose it might be an inherent property of space itself, something with negative pressure.
Negative pressure. What does that even mean?
It's a weird concept. Imagine the fabric of space itself is actively pushing outward, literally driving space apart. Yeah. And the kicker is, as space expands, it seems to create even more dark energy. It's this kind of mind-bending feedback loop.
So it just keeps accelerating.
Exactly. We can't detect it directly, but it's absolutely essential to explain why the universe is expanding the way it is. Our models just don't work without it. Then, of course, there's dark matter. That accounts for about 84% of all the matter in the universe.
84% of the matter. So most matter isn't even the stuff we see and interact with.
Precisely. It's this shadowy substance, doesn't absorb light, doesn't emit light. We haven't been able to detect it directly at all. Its presence is basically inferred only by its gravitational effects on visible matter, you know, on how galaxies spin, how they cluster together. People have been searching hard for these things called weakly interacting massive particles, or WIMPs.
Right, WIMPs. I've heard of those.
Yeah, these hypothetical particles that interact so rarely with ordinary matter, they're incredibly difficult to spot. But that search, globally, has pretty much come up empty so far.
So if we're effectively, I don't know, blind to what holds the cosmos together, what does that mean? Are our models of physics just incomplete, or do we need totally new ways to even look?
I think it's probably both. It's not just about missing ingredients in the cosmic recipe, you know? It fundamentally challenges our most successful models, like gravity. It's like discovering 95% of your house is built with invisible bricks you didn't know about.
Okay, yeah, that analogy works.
It forces us to rethink fundamental physics while also pushing the boundaries of technology, trying desperately to find these elusive things.
That really is mind-bending.
And speaking of challenging assumptions, let's talk about time. This idea that time itself isn't maybe the constant we think it is. Especially when you bring in the arrow of time and entropy.
Right, entropy. It's essentially the level of disorder in a system.
Yeah.
And naturally, it tends to increase. That's why, you know, a broken glass doesn't spontaneously put itself back together.
The second law of thermodynamics.
Exactly. But the real puzzle for physicists isn't why entropy increases. That makes sense. The puzzle is why it was so incredibly low in the early universe. Think about it. You had immense energy compressed into a tiny, tiny volume, but in a highly ordered state. Why so ordered? Ah, so the starting point is the mystery.
Precisely. The origin of that initial low entropy state remains this profound, unanswered question, and it connects the very nature of time to the, well, the genesis of the cosmos itself.
Okay, so beyond this unseen fabric of the cosmos, you mentioned the universe also sends us messages. Signals.
Yeah.
Some of which are just baffling. Let's dive into some of those cosmic whispers.
Yeah, definitely. The WOW signal is probably the classic example. It was this powerful 72-second blast of radio waves, detected back in 1977 by the Big Ear radio telescope, coming from the direction of Sagittarius.
72 seconds, that's very specific.
It is, and its intensity was startling. Plus, its frequency was remarkably close to the hydrogen line.
The hydrogen line, why is that significant?
Well, hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe, right? So that frequency, 1420 millihertz, is like a natural universal dial tone. If you were an advanced civilization trying to signal across interstellar space, it's a pretty logical frequency to choose. Makes it stand out.
Okay, I see.
But here's the real mystery. It happened once, that 72-second burst. And then, nothing. It never recurred, despite people looking and looking hard.
So that 72-second blast, it's fascinating. But if it never happened again, how do scientists rule out, say, some weird natural thing? Like a super energetic stellar flare that just happened to point our way once?
That's a really good question. And they have tried. They've considered various natural explanations, comets, weird atmospheric effects, even human-made signals bouncing off space debris. But none of them really fit the precise characteristics of the WOW signal, especially its narrow bandwidth. Natural astrophysical sources tend to be broadband, spread across frequencies.
Oh, okay.
And that hydrogen line specificity also points away from just random noise. So yeah, its fleeting one-off nature is what makes it so perplexing. It keeps that tiny possibility of an artificial origin alive, even though it's, you know, highly speculative.
Okay, let's move to something more recent then. Fast radio bursts, or FRBs. What are those?
Right, FRBs. These are incredibly brief, like millisecond long, but extremely high energy radio emissions. And they come from distant galaxies, way outside the Milky Way. Now, some have been linked to magnetars. These are a type of highly magnetized neutron star, very exotic object. But many others. Their origin is still completely unknown. And this is where you get some really out there ideas, like the Harvard theorist Avi Loeb. He's put forth this highly speculative theory. What if some FRBs are, quote, leakage from planet-sized transmitters powering interstellar probes?
Leakage from planet-sized transmitters.
Yeah. I mean, he suggests this would require a gigantic, water-cooled, solar-powered transmitter maybe twice the size of Earth.
Twice the size of Earth.
Yeah. It sounds like science fiction, and it's way beyond us. But he argues it's potentially within the realm of possibility for what's called a Type 2 or Type 3 civilization.
Okay, hang on. For those who might not know, what exactly is a Type 2 or 3 civilization?
Good question. It comes from the Kardashev scale. It's a way of classifying hypothetical civilizations based on their energy consumption. A type I can harness all the energy available on its planet. A type 2 can harness the entire energy output of its star think, maybe a Dyson sphere kind of structure.
Okay.
And a type 3, that could harness the energy of an entire galaxy. So we're talking about something incredibly advanced when Loeb mentions type 2 or 3, way beyond our current comprehension, really.
Wow. Okay. And just briefly, you mentioned there are other unexplained cosmic things out there, too.
Oh, yeah. There's the space roar, for example, this background cosmic noise that's like 6 times louder than our theories predict. It actually interferes with astronomers trying to study the very first stars. We don't know what's making it.
6 times louder.
Yep. And then there are ultra-high energy cosmic rays. These are particles, protons mostly, hitting our atmosphere with insane energy levels, energies far higher than we can generate in our biggest particle accelerators, like the LHC.
And we don't know where they come from.
We don't know the source, and we don't know how anything could accelerate them to such incredible speeds. It's another big mystery.
So all these things, invisible matter, fleeting signals, unexplained noises and particles, It really does challenge our basic assumptions, doesn't it? It makes you wonder, like you said earlier, what if time itself isn't the constant we experience it to be?
Exactly. And there's real science behind that idea, thanks to Einstein's theories of relativity. Time isn't absolute. It's relative. It depends on your speed, and it depends on how strong the gravitational field is around you. It's called time dilation.
Time dilation.
And it's not just theoretical. It's a verified, measurable reality. For instance, the clocks on GPS satellites. They orbit fast and are in a slightly weaker gravitational field than we are down here.
Right. I've heard they need adjustments.
They do, constantly, because time literally runs slightly faster for them. If we didn't account for that, GPS wouldn't work accurately at all. Or think about astronauts on the International Space Station. They're whizzing around Earth at like 17,500 miles per hour. They actually age just a tiny bit slower than people on Earth. Over a 6-month mission, the difference is minuscule, maybe 0.005 seconds. But it's real. It shows time is, well,
yeah,
valuable.
Wow. 0.005 seconds. Tiny, but it proves the principle. So even time isn't what we thought. And this is where, you know, science meets folklore in this really compelling way you mentioned, Mount Kailash in Tibet.
Yes, Mount Kailash. It's this incredibly sacred peak. And for centuries, local lore and pilgrims have claimed that time behaves differently in its vicinity. Mm. The most common report you hear is people experiencing accelerated aging, like their hair and fingernails grow much faster. Maybe the equivalent of 2 weeks growth in just 12 hours spent near the mountain.
2 weeks and 12 hours. That's dramatic. Right.
It is. And then there are these other stories, unverified but persistent, about a group of Siberian mountaineers. They supposedly tried to climb the mountain, got turned back, or had a strange experience, and allegedly aged by decades in just a few days. The story goes they all died within about a year after the expedition.
Decades and days. That sounds impossible.
Well, scientifically, that specific claim is completely unverified and sounds like legend. But the idea of time behaving strangely there, if you connect it to the established physics of time dilation, even though we don't know a specific mechanism at Kailash that could cause such extreme effects, it gives a sort of narrative plausibility to the concept of a time anomaly there.
I see. So the science says time can be relative, which makes the folklore, while maybe exaggerated, not entirely out of the realm of possibility conceptually.
Exactly. It's that link that's fascinating. It's where observed reality, or at least reported subjective experience, even if unexplained, kind of resonates with known scientific principles, even if the scale seems fantastical.
Okay, that Kailash example is really striking. The accelerated aging idea linked to time dilation. That's a potent mix of ancient lore and modern physics.
It really is. And it's a prime example, I think, of how sometimes these deep-seated myths or observations might tap into something real about the universe, even if the explanation remains a total mystery.
Okay, let's shift slightly. Another historical anomaly you mentioned that seems to link things happening in the sky with, well, maybe things happening in the sky, the 1952 Washington, D.C. UFO flap.
Right, that famous series of sightings over D.C. There was a recent study looking back at old astronomical photographic plates from around that time, pre-satellite era stuff, and they found something intriguing, a statistically significant correlation between the timing of the UFO sightings and what they called a short-lived transient event.
A transient event.
Meaning on these photographic plates, three stars appeared to vanish within about 50 minutes. Just gone.
Vanished. Like blinked out.
Seemingly. Now, the researchers were very cautious. Could it be plate defects? Maybe. But they noted these transients were far less frequent when the area photographed was in Earth's shadow.
Ah, suggesting it wasn't just a flaw in the plate itself.
Right. It suggested maybe it was caused by light reflecting off something unknown, something relatively close by. They called it a novel observational anomaly. And while they didn't claim it was aliens or anything, it does link that historical aerial phenomenon, the UFO flap, to a documented celestial anomaly. It definitely invites more investigation, maybe even into potential non-terrestrial artifacts, as they carefully put it.
Okay, intriguing. So moving from the vast cosmos down to Earth itself.
Yeah.
Let's dive deeper into objects found here that seem to mess with our neat, linear understanding of history.
Yes. These are often called O-parts out-of-place artifacts, objects found in contexts that just seem wrong, chronologically speaking. They challenge conventional timelines. The most famous and probably least controversial in terms of its genuine antiquity and complexity is the Antikythera mechanism.
Right, the Greek shipwreck thing.
Exactly. Found in a shipwreck off a Greek island, dating back over 2,200 years. It's this incredibly intricate device, about 37 meshing bronze gears and dials. It was basically a hand-powered analog computer.
A computer, 2,200 years ago.
Essentially, yeah. It could predict astronomical positions like the sun, moon, and planets. It could predict eclipses. It even tracked the four-year cycle of the ancient Olympic Games.
That's incredible.
It is. Its complexity was just unparalleled for its time. Nothing even close to that level of geared technology appeared again for over 1,000 years until the astronomical clocks of medieval Europe.
So this wasn't just some clever little gadget. It implies a whole level of scientific thinking and precision engineering that just vanished for a millennium.
That's exactly the implication. And it's profound. It suggests that human progress maybe isn't the smooth, continuous upward curve we often imagine. What if there were these brilliant flashes of ingenuity, like the Antikythera mechanism, peaks that societies reached, perhaps only briefly, before that knowledge was tragically lost, maybe through war, disaster, library burnings, who knows?
It really challenges that myth of constant progress, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Now, other O-parts are, well, more controversial. Take the Baghdad battery.
Ah, yes, the clay pot battery idea.
Right. It's a terracotta jar found near Baghdad, dating maybe to the Parthian period, a couple thousand years ago. Inside, there was a copper cylinder and an iron rod. Some fringe theories proposed it could have been a simple galvanic cell, a battery maybe used for electroplating gold onto silver.
But is there evidence for that?
That's the problem. There's zero archaeological evidence of electroplated artifacts from that period in that region. So the electroplating idea is widely rejected by mainstream archaeologists.
So what was it then?
A much more likely and frankly less exciting explanation is that it was simply a container for storing sacred scrolls. The materials might have degraded over time, leaving just the metal bits inside the jar.
Okay, that makes more sense. What about those drop of stones, the alien disc thing?
The drop of stones, that's a pure hoax, pretty much debunked. The story emerged in the mid-20th century about these 12,000-year-old granite discs found in a cave in the Himalayas, supposedly inscribed with tiny hieroglyphs telling of an alien spaceship crash landing.
Sounds like a movie plot.
It really does. And the descriptions perfectly matched 1930s sci-fi tropes popular at the time the story first surfaced. Plus, the alleged discs bear a strong resemblance to ancient Chinese artifacts called bai discs, which were ritual objects. No credible evidence for the drop of stones themselves has ever materialized.
Okay, so hoax and the London Hammer.
The London Hammer is another one that generated excitement initially. It's an iron hammerhead with a wooden handle found encased in rock in London, Texas in the 1930s. The rock looked ancient, supposedly Cretaceous, like 100 million years old, which would make the hammer impossibly old.
Right.
But later analysis showed the rock wasn't that old geologically. It was a concretion minerals dissolved in water that had hardened around the hammer relatively recently, probably within the last century or two. The hammer itself is likely just a 19th century miner's tool that got dropped and encased.
So some oparts are genuine mysteries, like Antiky Thorell, others less so.
Exactly. But even the hoaxes or misinterpretations tell us something, right? They show our fascination with the idea that history might be stranger than we think. But the bottom line, looking at examples like Antikythera especially, is that it's humbling. It highlights that human knowledge probably hasn't been this steady, linear ascent. Great leaps can be made and then somehow forgotten. Our picture of the past is almost certainly incomplete.
It really is humbling to think that what we can see both in the cosmos and in history, might be just a tiny fraction of what's actually there or what actually happened.
Absolutely. It suggests there could be forgotten truths, lost knowledge, buried deep in time.
Okay, this next concept you mentioned pushes things even further. We're circling back to Mount Kailash. It's not just this place of potential time anomalies, but this incredible confluence of ancient belief and geological mystery.
Yes, Kailash is really unique. It's profoundly sacred, as we said, to four major religions: Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, and the indigenous Tibetan Bon faith. It's revered by millions as the Axis Mundi, the literal center of the universe, the pillar connecting heaven and earth.
Axis Mundi.
Wow.
And its geography is just remarkable. Its four faces align almost perfectly with the cardinal directions north, south, east, west. And mythologically and geographically, it's seen as the source of four of Asia's greatest rivers, the Indus, the Sutlej, the Brahmaputra, and the Karnala Ganges. It embodies that role as the world's navel, the source of life.
That's incredible geography for one mountain.
It is. And then there's its shape. It's this striking, almost unnaturally symmetrical pyramid-like peak. This has led some researchers, particularly some Russian scientists, to propose a really controversial theory that Kailash isn't entirely natural.
Not natural, like man-made.
They suggest it might be a massive man-made pyramid, maybe part of a larger complex of pyramids in the region, now eroded or hidden. It's a fringe theory, not widely accepted, but it adds to the mountain's mystique.
A man-made mountain.
Adding to all this, it's famously the world's most renowned unclimbed major mountain. Climbing it has been forbidden for centuries due to its sacred status. And legends abound about climbers who tried anyway, experiencing bizarre things, getting lost, or even dying mysteriously. Whether true or not, the stories persist.
So it's protected by its sacredness and perhaps by something else.
Perhaps. And then right at its base, you have these twin lakes. Lake Manasarovar, beautiful, round, fresh water, considered sacred and representing light or positive energy. And right next to it, Lake Rakshastal, crescent-shaped salt water, considered demonic or representing darkness, negative energy. This geological puzzle, these two contrasting lakes side by side, serves as this perfect, almost cosmic symbol of opposing forces, like yin and yang.
Fresh water and salt water right next to each other. That is geologically odd.
It is quite unusual. So if you step back and look at Kailash, What does it all signify for a broader understanding? I think it highlights this profound connection that seems to exist between ancient intuitive understanding, the myths, the sacredness, and observable yet still unexplained phenomena like the weird geology or the time anomaly reports. It suggests that maybe ancient myth wasn't just, you know, blind superstition. Maybe it was an interpretive framework they used for a reality they genuinely experienced, even if they lacked our modern scientific tools to measure or explain it.
That's a powerful thought, myth as an interpretation of experienced reality.
Okay.
So, our deep dive now takes us to maybe the most intimate frontier of all, the human mind itself, because the nature of consciousness that presents perhaps the most profound challenge we face.
Absolutely. Consciousness, that subjective first-person experience of being, of seeing red, feeling joy, thinking thoughts, it's often called the hard problem of science.
The hard problem. Why hard?
Because it seems impossible to explain using purely physical, objective processes alone. The dominant view in neuroscience, materialism, sees consciousness as an emergent property.
Emergent property, like wetness from water molecules.
Exactly like that. The idea is that consciousness somehow arises from the complex interactions of non-conscious parts, like neurons firing in the brain. Billions of dumb neurons interacting create smart awareness. But this leaves this huge philosophical gap. Why should any arrangement of matter, no matter how complex, suddenly give rise to subjective feeling? There's no compelling scientific reason why complex processing must feel like something from the inside.
Right. You can map the brain activity, but you can't map the feeling itself.
Precisely. The objective processes don't seem to logically necessitate the subjective experience.
So this raises a huge question. What if consciousness isn't just something our brains produce? What if it's something else?
Exactly. This impasse, this hard problem, has pushed some scientists and philosophers towards more radical theories. One is the quantum mind hypothesis. It suggests consciousness might be linked somehow to the weirdness of quantum mechanics phenomena like entanglement, superposition.
Quantum mechanics in the brain? How would that even work?
Well, proponents like the physicist Eugene Wigner or Roger Penrose more recently have speculated that consciousness might even play a role in collapsing the wave function.
Collapsing the wave function. That's the bit where a quantum particle sort of chooses its state when measured.
Yes. The idea, very speculatively, is that consciousness isn't just a passive observer or byproduct of brain activity, but might be an active participant in determining reality at its most fundamental quantum level.
Wow. That sounds incredibly profound, but also highly controversial, I imagine. What did the critics say? Why wouldn't the brain be suitable for quantum stuff?
You're absolutely right. It's hugely controversial. The main counterargument is something called decoherence. Critics argue that the brain is just too warm, too wet, too noisy, biochemically speaking. It's a chaotic environment.
Not like a carefully controlled lab experiment.
Exactly. They argue that any delicate quantum states, like superposition, would instantly decohere, basically fall apart and revert to classical behavior, long before they could do anything useful for thought or consciousness. The environment would just destroy the quantum effects.
So how do the proponents respond to that?
They propose various ideas about how the brain might shield or maintain quantum coherence, perhaps in specific tiny structures within neurons called microtubules. But honestly, it remains a highly theoretical debate. There is no solid empirical proof yet that quantum mechanics plays a direct functional role in consciousness itself.
Okay, so quantum mind is one avenue. What else?
Perhaps even more provocative framework is something like quantum information panpsychism, or QIP.
Panpsychism, that's the idea that consciousness is everywhere, in everything.
Sort of, yeah. Panpsychism in general suggests consciousness is a fundamental property of reality, not something that emerges only in complex brains. QIP specifically posits that maybe quantum fields themselves are inherently conscious or possess proto-consciousness, and our physical bodies, our brains, are like complex quantum classical machines that are operated, in a sense, by the decisions or free will arising from these conscious fields.
So the field is conscious and the body is like its vehicle.
That's one way to think about it, yeah. It aligns with this broader idea of a conscious cosmos, a universe that isn't just dead matter and energy, but maybe a dynamic, interconnected web of information and awareness. Our individual minds in this view might be like localized expressions or whirlpools within this universal field of consciousness.
The implications there are just huge. These theories really seem to bridge science and maybe even spirituality, suggesting this non-local, interconnected reality that quantum mechanics itself seems to hint at.
They absolutely do. And this leads naturally to another key idea, reality as a construct.
Meaning what we perceive isn't real.
Not quite that it isn't real, but that our perception of it isn't passive. It's an active, subjective construction created by our minds. Your brain takes in the raw sensory data, but then it filters it, interprets it based on your past experiences, your culture, your expectations, your biases, everything.
So we're all living in slightly different realities, shaped by our minds.
In a very real sense, yes. The reality your experience isn't the raw territory, it's the map your mind creates. And things like mystical experiences or altered states of consciousness could perhaps be understood as temporary shifts in how that map is constructed, maybe allowing glimpses of something beyond the usual filters.
And there's a feedback loop too, right? What we believe affects what we perceive.
Absolutely. It's incredibly powerful. Our beliefs shape our perceptions, guiding what we pay attention to and how we interpret it. And then those perceptions tend to reinforce our original beliefs. It can be a closed loop.
Which leads us right back to that incredibly profound question you posed earlier. What if reality isn't something you live in, but something you're meant to awaken from? Short pause. It's questions like that, isn't it? That really show how interconnected all these seemingly separate mysteries truly are. We've journeyed through cosmic riddles, you know, ancient enigmas, the deep mysteries of our own minds. But these threads, they're not isolated, are they?
Not at all. That's the key insight, I think. The unexplained cosmic phenomena, the hints of lost ancient knowledge, the paradox of our own consciousness. You can see them all as clues, as fragments, maybe, of a much larger truth that remains just hidden behind a veil, as we said at the start.
And putting these fragments together, synthesizing them, it provides this conceptual framework, doesn't it? For new ways of thinking, maybe even for storytelling that bridges these different fields. Like you could take the real-world mysteries of Mount Kailash, the weird aging reports, its pyramid shape.
Right. And those could inspire speculative ideas about the mountain as, say, a multidimensional portal or a destination for a quest to unveil forgotten truths. The reality fuels the fiction, which explores the possibilities.
Or take black hole physics.
Yeah, the sheer exoticness of those environments, the extreme gravity, the fact that we can't directly observe what's inside, that naturally leads to really speculative ideas, maybe about bizarre alien-like life forms connected to black holes, challenging our very definition of what life even is.
And those cosmic signals we talked about.
The WIW signal, the FRBs. They almost inevitably inspire thoughts of advanced, unobserved intelligence out there, or maybe even deliberate messages intended for humanity's awakening, if you want to get really imaginative.
Right. And finally, tying it all back to consciousness.
That hard problem, the subjective nature of perception, this idea of reality as a construct.
Right.
It all connects beautifully to this central theme, maybe represented by something like a fractal as an echo of awareness.
A fractal. Explain that metaphor a bit more.
Well, a fractal is a pattern that repeats itself at every scale, right? Zoom in and you see the same basic structure as the whole. So maybe reality or consciousness has this fractal nature. Maybe the journey of the individual mind trying to understand itself echoes the journey of the cosmos becoming aware of itself. It represents this idea of awakening from that constructed, veiled reality to perceive a deeper interconnected truth where the part reflects the whole.
That fractal idea is powerful, a self-similar pattern. Echoing from the cosmic scale right down to our own awareness. It really resonates with that conscious cosmos concept you mentioned.
It does. So stepping back one last time, the enduring mysteries we've explored today, they aren't just separate curiosities. They really do seem to be these interconnected threads in a grand universal tapestry. And they invite you, they invite all of us to look beyond the established paradigms, the comfortable explanations, and to really reconsider the fundamental nature of reality itself. They present this compelling vision, I think, of a universe that is far stranger, far more dynamic, and maybe far more consciously aware than we typically assume.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Well, hopefully it's about sparking that joy of discovery, that thrill of asking the big questions, and maybe recognizing that the universe and, yeah, your own place within it is this profound ongoing mystery. Keep seeking those aha moments,
right?
You know? And maybe here's a final thought to leave you with. What new connections, what new possibilities start to emerge for you when you consider these seemingly disparate mysteries, cosmic, ancient, mental, not as separate problems, but as fragments of a single, larger, maybe still unfolding truth? What might you awaken from?